This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Comic Bill Maher is the host of Politically Incorrect on the Comedy Central cable network. The show has become so popular that in January it will move to ABC, where it will be broadcast at midnight following Nightline. Politically Incorrect is a hybrid of The Tonight Show and The McLaughlin Group. Maher opens with a comic monologue, then he brings out his guests to discuss current issues. Guests on a typical show may include a senator, a TV star, a rock star, a think tank scholar, and a stand-up comic, people that are unlikely to talk with each other about politics on any other TV show. Guests have included Jerry Seinfeld, George Stephanopoulos, the president's brother Roger, Senator Arlen Specter, Quentin Tarantino, Al Sharpton, and Sam Donaldson. Many of the show's high points are included in Maher's new book, Does Anybody Have a Problem with That? I asked Bill Maher how he came up with the idea for Politically Incorrect.
Well, I just sort of thought there was nothing on TV that was the kind of show I would want to watch, on a regular basis, as far as a talk show went. And it seemed to me that the concept of talk itself had gone out of talk shows. Which is not to say that they had gotten worse. They just had become something else. They had become variety comedy shows. And I thought, gosh, there must be a place in television for really interesting, lively, real conversation among a few different people, in our case, five every night, talking about whatever people would be talking about at an interesting cocktail party. Whatever's going on in the world, in the country, and in lives, out of the paper, so forth. And so, luckily for me, there wasn't such a show. Because if there was, then I'd be stealing it.
So is every publicist in America trying to convince you now that their client is politically engagé?
Yeah, right. Engagé. Whatever that is. I can get that by context. I took the SATs. We have a nice thing going now where I think a lot of people want to be on the show and people do actually solicit our show, whereas we used to have to beg them. But I will also tell you that publicists are very often afraid of this show for their clients because they're afraid that their clients will come on and look stupid. And you know what? They're right. You can come on the show and look stupid. Not that you really have to be any sort of expert at anything, but I understand the apprehension, and I cannot tell you how many times I have run into celebrities out at functions in L.A., charities and so forth, and had them come up to me and say, I'm a big fan of your show, and I'll say, great, I'd love to have you do it, and they say, good, I'd like to, and then 6 months later I see them again, and they said, why didn't you ever call me? And the truth is, we did call them. We called their publicist, and the publicist never gave them the message because the publicist doesn't want them to do the show.
Now, you've had a lot of people on the show who you've probably...
Horrifying tale, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably a lot of your guests are people who politically you strongly disagree with and really don't like. But when you're sitting across from them in this studio and you're interacting with them as people, is your mind often changed? Do you often find yourself actually liking somebody in spite of the fact that you really disagree with them politically?
Well, those are two different questions, and yes to both. My mind is often changed, not just by guests, but by very often the last thing I read. I'd hate to be a politician because when you're a politician, you're really not allowed to change your mind because if you do, they say you're waffling, or you're unsteady or you're going back on a position. And I find this world changes so fast and there's so much information that, yes, correct. Gosh, you read something one day and it's like, okay, yeah, you convinced me, you got me. I didn't know everything about that. And I see the point now. As far as... the other part of it is, do I like people who I disagree with? Very often. And one thing this show has taught me is that ideology is ideology and television is television. And to most of the people who come on, it is the latter that is more important. I've seen people have heated debates and the second it's over, they're talking about the human element, the thing that they have in common. They probably both live in Washington or something, and they have dinner with each other. I mean, how can James Carville and Mary Matlin be married to each other?
That's what I've been trying to figure out.
Well, obviously, these people are very adept at leaving their ideology at the doorstep at a drop of a hat. And since I come in with a very mixed bag of ideology, and since I do this every night with all different kinds of people, it's been no problem for me to just, you know, take them as people. And, you know, the politics is the politics. Unless they're Nazis or something, you know, look, I don't have all the answers. I may disagree with an approach, but I don't think Republicans or Democrats, if whoever I'm disagreeing with, are evil or that they're trying to ruin the country or do... We just have a disagreement about how best to, you know, probably accomplish the same ends.
So what have been your biggest political changes over the years?
Well, I would say that when I was first voting, I probably was very much under my father's wing. And my father was, God bless him, one of the last of the true bleeding heart liberal Kennedy Democrats. Very proud of that. And I'm very proud to be his son. And proud that he was that. But I'm not completely that. Sometimes I am. But I would say, you know, I've learned to sort of think more for myself. But when I was a kid, you know, there was no other way to think about things. I mean, in our household, you know, no one said a bad word about the Kennedys or questioned that very dogmatic line of thinking.
So when you broke with your father's politics, did you become more radical or more conservative?
I would say I became, excuse me, more conservative out of necessity on certain issues. Mostly because we are in an era now that doesn't afford liberalism as easy. To be liberal costs a lot of money, which we don't have. My theme that I'm often saying, and I think it's somewhere in this book, is that liberalism is something I really believe we should aspire to. And I would never be proud of being a conservative, but where it's necessary, yes, I'm not going to be stupid about it. If you owe $5 trillion, I'd like to see it paid back. It makes me very nervous to owe that kind of money. So certain things that I think would be wonderful to do for my fellow man, we'll probably have to wait because we spent a lot of that money on God knows what.
Now, did you do a lot of political material in your early stand-up performances?
I always did some political material. I don't know if I've ever, even to this day in my stand-up, I know for a fact to this day I don't do, I would say, a majority of political material. But I say that with a proviso, which is that just like the show that I do, the Politically Incorrect show, I sort of believe almost anything is political. I mean, you can be talking about the last movie you saw, and that can be political. It can have political overtones. There really is politics in a lot of life. It's how you look at it.
I've noticed that some comics who think of themselves as political comics have 6 minutes that they've been doing for the last 4 years, and they're still like Gulf War jokes because they haven't freshened the material in that long.
Yeah. I've had the same observation, Terry.
Why is that? Why do you think there's so little really current good political humor?
I don't know. I guess it's partly because comics are afraid that people won't get it. And also it's partly because I think comics are a reflection of the society we live in. If the society is politically attuned, you'll probably have more comics who are. And if the society isn't, you probably won't. I think comics are a slice of life out of us. And not many people, I mean, yes, millions, but millions out of a country of many, many tens of millions are interested in politics.
There's, you know, political humor with teeth and political humor that's toothless. I'm wondering if you can think of examples of a kind of political humor that you think of as just like really bland and unnecessary, and something that's, you know, something with teeth, that the kind of humor that I imagine you'd prefer.
Yes, I despise the kind of joke that's just the generic you know, yeah, Congress did this today. They want a bunch of, you know, just like they're all bad. That kind of where, and you know, who can't get cheap applause just being firing some broadside about how awful politicians are or how dumb Congress is. That's usually anything that inspires that kind of cheap applause just irks me. And I mean, I see it on my show, and I think I get the smartest crowd, studio audience in television comes to my show. But there's something about when you say certain things, you know, we just had a baby. Apply, yay, yay, yay.
Right, yeah.
Yes, I've been making love to my wife every night. Woo, woo. And it's the same thing with politics. You say certain hot-button things, and people applaud, and it's just cheap. I refuse. I've always refused to do that. I nothing noble about it. It just seconds me. So probably I go too far, you know. I mean, I probably blame the people as much as the politicians, and the people will probably rise up and hate me for it one day. But I'm sorry, I really do believe that, you know, we get the politicians we deserve.
Give me an example of something that you think really has teeth.
Oh, well, gosh. Certainly in our monologues every night, we try to do, I mean, I did a joke about the Admiral Borda the other day, and somebody took me to task for it. And, you know, it was a tragedy, but then again, I didn't think it was so out of bounds that it couldn't be joked about.
What'd you say?
But maybe I'm wrong. I'm not quite sure. I think it had something to do with, Clinton had just appointed his replacement, Admiral J. Johnson, I believe. And the paper said that he was one of the Navy's fastest rising stars. And I said, yes, he's rising so fast, I expect he might kill himself by the end of the summer. Which I'm sure is in bad taste. But, you know, if once in a while you don't go over the line, you don't know where the line is.
My guest is comic Bill Maher. He's the host of Politically Incorrect. He has a new book called Does Anybody Have a Problem With That? We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with comic Bill Maher, the host of Politically Incorrect. Now, your new book is called Does Anybody Have a Problem With That?
Yes.
And it's a book that's excerpts of programs that you've done. Your previous book, True Story, was a novel about the comedy circuit during the comedy boom. And in the novel, one of the characters really resents the comedy boom. He curses the luck that he came of age just as every jerk in America who'd ever gotten a laugh at a fraternity party was now crowding the field. Now, did you feel that way, too? Did you resent entering comedy at the time of the comedy boom?
Yeah, well, a little bit, yes. There was a good and a bad side to that. It's true that when I started in 1979, that's exactly when this comedy boom, this sort of rebirth of vaudeville started, which is why I thought it would make a great setting for a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an exciting time, and there certainly was, because of the boom and because of the more comedians, more opportunities, more clubs, more places to play, money to be made, publicity to be had. On the other hand, it was a little bit like a marathon where you can't really tell who's going to be the, you know, among the finishers in the race at the beginning of the race, because there's so many people crowding the field. You have to wait, you know, 5 or 10 miles to see who's for real and who's thrown up on the side of the road.
You know, a lot of people had what you might call a gimmick, you know, or identifying
a hook.
Trait, a hook, yeah.
Right.
Like one guy's the prop comic, one guy's the sex-obsessed guy, one guy's got a persona that he never leaves. You know, somebody else bases their hook on you know, what they look like. They're fat, or they're skinny, or they're tall, or
Dice
they're short.
Clay.
Yeah.
Or the screaming, the guy who screams.
Right, someone's really rude.
Right, right.
So did you ever think, oh, I've got to get a hook?
I would have loved to have a hook. I would have actually cut my hand off and put on a hook. I would have been the pirate comic if I thought that it would have gotten me off the bottom faster. But, you know, you can't fool the crowd. They know what's real about you and what's not. And, I mean, you could have a short-lived blip of fame, I suppose, if you went with something that wasn't really you. But at the end of the day, We're talking about a career. We're talking about your lifetime, and especially in comedy and music, you know, the talent sort of flowers young, and really by middle age, it's usually gone or sort of irrelevant. But a comedy, you know, you can do. And I mean, Johnny Carson was there till he was late 60s, still in his prime, really. George Burns worked almost right up until he died at 100. You know, so you really got to think about the long haul in comedy. So I'm glad that I found my niche, you know, even though it took a long time, because now I can live in that skin for the rest of my life.
Now, in your novel, True Story, you describe one of the characters as a comic who never bombed gracefully because it was so hard for him to say nothing when a joke died.
Right.
Were you like that at all yourself?
Yes, I was. When I started, it's true. We all know how good it feels to make someone laugh. We don't all do it professionally, but we've all gotten laughs, and it's a great feeling. It's like, oh, you gave someone that wonderful little gift of laughter. So when you give them your little gift, what you think is going to be a little gift, and they throw it right back in your face, it's terrible. It's such a rejection. It's such a rejection.
So what would you do? Would you insult the audience or try to explain the joke to them and show if they were only smarter, they would have realized that this was funny?
Those and 800 other bad responses is what I did. Yes, I mean, Johnny Carson used to be a master at, I mean, his jokes would bomb in the monologue frequently, and he would do what we call in the business savers.
Right.
Where he would sort of, you know, explain some, you see, that was, he was president a few years ago. Something like, you know, and the audience would kind of laugh because, first of all, he was Johnny Carson, and he had the authority to get away with that. And he did it in a sort of teasing way that wasn't insulting the audience.
Now, what did you know stand-up comedy from records, from nightclubs, from the Borscht Belt, from television?
Yeah, I would say television more than anything. I mean, when I was a little kid, Ed Sullivan was still on, and that was probably the premier forum for it. I would see Alan King and, I mean, Carlin, Pryor, Robert Klein. They all did Ed Sullivan and Merv Griffin, shows like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was a little older, I was able to stay up and watch The Tonight Show. And then there was a lot of comics there. And, of course, Johnny was a great comic. And, you know, I didn't have to see him too many times before I realized, oh, that's the job I want.
I want to
be the guy who brings the comics on. You know, I want to be City Hall so I don't have to fight it.
I remember one night when I was watching your show, I think it was Sandra Bernhardt spit in the face of a very conservative guest. So I was wondering, she's such a performance artist. I mean, you never know what's real and what's performance in her life. But I was wondering if there were any repercussions or if the guest was, you know, because I saw the guest again afterwards, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, we had him back. John Lofton is his name. He is, excuse me, a fundamental Christian preacher guy, whatever, I don't know his exact title. I know that I got a lot of letters from Christians who said, don't think he represents us.
Mm-hmm.
Even they didn't like him too much.
What occasion Sandra Bernhardt spit in his face? What did he?
Well, he was going on and on about her in the Jewish religion. He said in the Jewish religion, you couldn't even speak, which I guess is some reference to an archaic Jewish law about, you know, I mean, religions have some pretty sexist laws on the books going way back. And I think there is, I'm not really sure, having not been raised Jewish myself, but there's something about not being able to speak. Maybe it's in temple, or I don't know what he was referring to exactly, but it was vaguely familiar. And of course, she just, you know, it just pushed every button in Sandra the wrong way. I mean, you know, to say to a Jewish bisexual performance artist that you can't speak, not a good thing.
So when she spit in his face, did you say to yourself, what a great, exciting, thrilling television moment this is?
Well, I mean, it was not much of a spit. It's not like she, you know, hocked a huge loogie in his eye. I mean, it was just kind of like, I never really saw it, but, you know, I was kind of too busy wondering what happened, what was going on with my show, and was I ever going to regain control?
Did you?
Not really.
Did you cut to a commercial?
No. No. I mean, I was enjoying it, but You know, I certainly wasn't very much in control or that night.
One last question for you. Your show on Comedy Central is now in reruns for part or all of the summer. And they're arranged thematically.
For June. Okay. Yes, we'll be back July 9th.
Great, and it's arranged thematically. So you have a few weeks where you don't have to go on the air every day.
Right.
So are you taking a break from reading the newspapers, or, you know, are you reading them really carefully anyways?
Look, if I'm at the beach one day and I miss the paper on my vacation, I miss the paper. That's my attitude. I don't think I could probably go a week or two without, you know, knowing at all what's going on in the world. It's too interesting. That's what I don't understand about people who don't follow what's going on, because it's like, gosh, you're watching soap operas? Hey, let me tell you about a real one that's going on that I think you'd find very fascinating if you just got into it. So, I mean, I'm genuinely interested, so it's not like I have to force myself. But then again, when I'm on vacation, I'm like anybody else. Some days I just want to forget about everything, or I'm too busy having a darn good time. So it's a little of both.
Well, Bill Maher, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Bill Maher is the host of Politically Incorrect. His new book is called Does Anybody Have a Problem with That? I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.